Chapter 26. Charlie awoke in the back of a truck to the nasal crick crack of egrets on the lake. The weed had knocked her out, and she had fallen asleep next to Dirk, who was sighing peacefully, an arm thrown over his eyes. Dew had glazed the truck and everything in it, soaked her clothes and shoes. She pushed herself up, careful not to jostle Dirk, and looked for something to drink. She was thirsty as hell. Nothing in the back, nothing in the cab. She could wake Dirk up and ask him to take her to the gas station for a Coke, but she was feeling funny about having spent the night with him. Not that she thought he had done anything to her. It was just that she had never slept with anyone like that. No one but her mom. She didn't know what he would expect of her, or what he thought it meant that she had gotten high and slept with him, next to him. She lifted her bike by the handlebar and lowered it off the side of the truck to the ground. She sat on the edge and hopped off, the truck swaying a little with the shift in weight. Dirk snoozed on. The grass was thick for riding, so she walked the bike until there was road enough to ride into town. When she got to the gas station, she left her bike out front and threw open the door. She didn't have a cent on her, but grabbed a bottle from the fridge anyway and walked it up to the register. There was Wanda at her post behind the counter, watching the news on a little black and white set mounted on the wall. To her right, gathered beside the coffee pot, were Beulah Baker and the man who had come calling a couple weeks back. The man who had thrown her mom into a frenzy. She hadn't gotten a good look at him before, but here in the white fluorescent light, he was striking. Beulah must have thought so, too. She stood on one leg, the other hitched up, her foot wrapped coyly around her ankle. She wore head-to-toe spandex with little Velcro weights strapped to her wrists and ankles.
"I can't tell you how impressed I was with your take on Samson and Delilah," she said to the man. "I don't think I've ever heard it told so sensual. You make the Bible positively thrilling."
"It's not me," Manny said. "It's in the scripture. The good book is only boring for people who lack imagination."
Charlie marveled at his smoothness. She laughed at Beulah, twirling her hair and biting her lip, her leotard riding up in the back. Beulah tugged it down with a swipe of her thumb.
"Now, where are you off to looking so fit?" Manny asked, tugging the pink strap at her shoulder.
"Oh, I'm fixing to go to Jazzercise over in Waller."
"Is that right?" he said, eyes locked on Beulah like she was fascinating beyond belief.
Charlie couldn't decide whether this was the most odious or the most hilarious conversation she had ever witnessed.
"Well, I just have to exercise. I'm too fond of my chips and queso."
She slapped him on the shoulder to punctuate her joke.
"Anywho, much as I'd like to stay and chat, I better not be late."
"Not on account of me," he said.
She squinted, like what he had said was too cute.
"Well, bye then," she said,
sweet as corn syrup. The man nodded farewell, and Beulah sashayed down the snack aisle in her white high tops, a secret smile on her face until she saw Charlie.
"What are you looking at, missy?"
she said in a nasty way. Charlie waited till she had turned and left before she mimed gagging herself in Beulah's direction. Ever since the pencil incident, Beulah and her crew, the well-to-do ladies of Pecan Hollow, went out of their way to be rude to Charlie. Not that she had ever been in their good favor, but now they openly scowled. Wanda wiped down the cash register with a spray bottle of Windex and a rag. She wore an oversized t-shirt and shorts with big pockets. The gray hair she parted down the middle was in dire need of a comb.
Say, Wanda?
Charlie said, sidling up to the counter all casual-like.
I left my money at home. How's about you let me drink a Coke now and pay for it later? You're full of shit, Walker. I got no Cokes for beggars.
Charlie huffed.
Come on. I'll ride right back and pay you once I find some money at my house. Just this once, man. I'm thirsty. Go home and drink something at your house then, said Wanda,
who was perpetually crabby.
I'm not giving nothing out for free.
She even drew back the leave a penny, take a penny saucer in case Charlie was inclined to avail herself of it.
I'm sick of that nasty well water. I just want a Coke. Come on, Wanda.
Wanda wasn't having it. She folded her big arms on top of her stomach and set her bottom lip to show she would not budge. Charlie was too thirsty to keep pressing. She might as well ride home and drink the stinking well water. Maybe a miracle had happened and her mom had picked up a liter of Big Red or something.
Bye, Wanda. I'll remember your kindness next time you need a favor from me,
Charlie said as she walked out the door. Wanda flipped her off. She was astride her bike and ready to head home to face whatever shitstorm awaited her when the handsome man came out after her.
Hey, you're Kit's girl, right?
The man said, a few feet behind her. She turned to face him. He seemed taller now that he stood so close to her. Beautiful, if beautiful had been chewed up, spit out, and sun-dried. And his eyes, boy, did they shine. He unwrapped a lemon candy and popped it in his mouth.
Yeah, you came by the other day, she said. I remember.
Manny, he said, holding out a hand to shake. I think I glimpsed you in the window. You're the spitting image of your mother.
She felt she owed it to him to be pleasant, but something about meeting a man she didn't know outside a gas station gave her pause. He must have seen her hesitate because he withdrew his hand. Then he reached behind him and pulled a pair of Cokes out of his back pockets.
Did you buy those?
She asked. He shook his head no and smiled, with mischief on his eyebrows.
Well, shit, she said. You really didn't have to do that.
It was the principle of the thing, he said. She was being unreasonable.
Charlie laughed.
You've got a funny set of principles.
She thought her comment was fair, but Manny withdrew his head and made a face as if snubbed. Did he really think he was doing the right thing by stealing? She remembered her rasping thirst and felt she couldn't get the drink down her throat quick enough. The sweet, cold liquid flooded her mouth, fizzing into her nostrils. She pinched her nose and scrunched her face, then drank again.
You're welcome, he said.
Shit, sorry, thanks,
she said, wiping her mouth with the back of her arm.
Nice of you.
He flipped the top off his bottle and held it out to toast.
To getting what you want, he said.
She tipped her bottle toward him without touching. She was inclined to interview the guy and find out why Kit was so sore at him, why he'd shown up out of the blue.
Say, none of my business, but aren't you a little young to be riding around early morning by yourself?
Is 13 too young?
She said, a little annoyed by his gall.
I've been getting around on my own since forever.
Manny put up his hands, bowed his head.
Fair enough. I guess you country girls know how to look out for yourselves.
I gotta go, she said. Nice to meet you proper.
Tell your mama I said hi, he said.
I'd better not, Charlie said,
remembering the fight that had followed his arrival.
She seemed pretty pissed after you left.
You don't say,
Manny said, frowning as if in thought.
In that case, you're probably right. I don't want to get either one of us in trouble.
Well, too late for me, she said, walking her bike to the road. But for your sake, I won't mention seeing you. You really don't want to get on her bad side.
Charlie pedaled toward home on a nice sugar high. Between hanging out with Dirk and meeting this mystery man, this was about the most excitement she had maybe ever had. If only she could run home to Kit, flop down in her lap, and tell her everything. Chapter 27. As the girl biked away from him, Manny wanted to run after her and make her stay. He had so much to ask her. This girl who must certainly be his daughter. He puzzled through the pieces of what he knew. The girl was the right age to have been born within a year of the last time he and Kit had been together. But he had walked Kit to the abortion, and paid the doctor, and done everything but cut it out himself. She had bled all over two sets of sheets, an awful mess. But maybe, somehow, the doctor had botched the procedure. It would have to be a miracle. But this great swelling in his chest and the love he was feeling for the kid told him he was not wrong. This girl was his. She was her mother in her toughness, the arrogant cheekbones, the dark-eyed squint. Blunt, too. But she had more charisma, more vitality, confidence even. Kit was all fang, yet she lacked the sense to know when to let down her guard. But the overall look of the girl was Manny, through and through. And she'd gotten his long legs, too, thank God. There was no guile in Charlie that he could see, but that could be taught. He started to imagine the possibilities. He had come to Pecan Hollow for Kit, not knowing she was hiding something even better, his own flesh and blood. He considered how to broach the topic of Charlie without sending Kit into a tizzy. He had given her a wide berth these past 2 weeks, but wondered about testing her, seeing if she'd become more malleable. He sensed Kit's attraction to him was still there. He'd always been able to spot it. If she'd let him in, just a bit, he could make a case for spending more time with her, catching up, righting the wrongs they'd done to each other. How quickly would she fess up about having the baby? Had she meant to? Or when she realized she was still pregnant, simply run? He would have to appear indifferent about the girl, though. Kit would be cautious, if not hostile, on that issue, he was sure. In an hour, he'd be expected at a volunteer job he had created for himself, running errands for an old widow named Jo Beth Crabtree, who lived all alone on a ranch. She had been salty and suspicious at first, made him stand at a distance while she sized him up. When she found out Pastor Tom had sent him, she uttered a stiff apology and told him she wouldn't pay a cent, but if he was doing the Lord's work, she wouldn't turn him away. How he hated the elderly, those walking corpses, all bones and liver spots and cloudy eyes. Once he had ingratiated himself, she allowed him considerable access to her home. He sat with her on the porch and fluffed her pillows, brought her iced tea with mint when she got thirsty, and dosed her medicine, the print on the labels being too tiny for Jo Beth to decipher. He read the Bible to her, fetched her groceries, fed her cats and a teacup chihuahua named Churro. A few hours a week, he gave her his time and didn't charge her for anything. Given all the value he was bringing to her, he thought it only fair to deduct a tiny tax for his troubles. For example, when he shopped for groceries, he added a few things for himself to the cart. He always offered her the receipt as a show of honesty, but she couldn't make out the numbers. And while she napped in her easy chair, he slipped a few bills from the stacks of cash she tucked under the linens, never enough to notice just by looking. This way, she got to think he was there out of the goodness of his heart and for the pleasure of her company. Win-win. Manny took in the molasses stink of the asphalt and began to walk. He would need wheels eventually, but for now didn't mind the miles underfoot, the hellish heat. How long he had dreamed of stretching his legs like this, covering distance when he was in prison. Free to roam, anonymous and safe. There he had jogged in place in his cell, working hard, going nowhere. A small corner of the yard, which was bare cement surrounded by 30 feet of fence and barbed wire, had been his only territory, and even those privileges were regularly stripped. They had tried to break him down, make him small. But here he was expanding. He was making his mark in this little town. After he'd spent an hour or so doing odds and ends for Joe Beth, Sandy picked him up and drove him to Kit's, parking along the split log fence outside her property. The wind picked up as the afternoon sun lurked behind the trees. Sandy stuffed her stale gum in the ashtray and replaced it with a fresh pink strip, then tucked her bare feet beneath her. As Manny looked at Kit's house, he could feel Sandy looking at him.
"What do you know about those two?" he said, cranking down the window.
She pulled at her chewing gum and wrapped it around her finger.
"I used to get along okay. Seems like they've been growing apart. That kind of thing happens to mother and daughter, I guess."
"How do you figure?" Manny asked.
"Well, around the time a girl gets her cycle, I guess. Hormones and whatnot."
She tucked her chin with an embarrassed flush. He leaned in, curious, played with the natty hem of her synthetic skirt. Eager to help, she mustered a matter-of-fact tone and went on.
"This is a small town, you know, and there aren't a lot of men to go around. I know Ms. Kit ain't the dating type, but I think it's just human nature for a lady to be jealous when there's someone prettier and younger around."
She snatched a breath.
"At least that's when the trouble started with my mama. I wasn't looking for it, swear to God."
He looked at Sandy intently. She continued, seeming to know what he wanted.
"But I developed early, and her boyfriends noticed me. I was still playing with dolls when my boobs came in. I didn't care about men, not being with them. But she didn't know that. She expected the worst of me. I guess I was flattered. Maybe I egged him on. That's right around the time she started using."
Sandy scratched a mosquito bite with a purple drugstore press-on nail.
"Manny?"
She paused, as if unsure of whether to ask the question.
"What is it that you see in her?"
He didn't like being baited. She probed.
"She's so rough and boyish. And no offense, but it don't seem like she's interested."
Manny lashed her with a look.
"Oh, she's more than interested. She's bound to me. She puts up such a fight, but inside, deep inside, she knows I'm all she ever needed."
He felt himself puff up with a righteous sort of feeling.
"I'm the someone who sees the black thorns around her heart, who knows the wrong in her and likes her better that way. I'm the only one who won't try to make her something she's not."
Sandy seemed to buckle under the load of his sentiment. Her eyes lost focus. Her lips disappeared between her teeth. She began to pry the false nail from her thumb.
"Seems like a lot of work,"
she said petulantly.
"Work? The work is the reason. Once you stop having to work for it, he said. Well, you might as well blow off your fucking head.
Sandy seemed to take this in and changed tack.
She must mean an awful lot to you, she said. I forget you knew each other back when.
We were a team, Manny said,
half calmed by her approach.
She knows as well as I do that there's no running from it.
Manny took Sandy's sweaty hands in his and held them, felt her tug just slightly away.
See, Kit's not a woman, but a feral creature. She bites and scratches and draws blood. I saw that fierceness in her eyes the first day I met her. She and I took each other close to death and lived right there on the edge of it. We took a piss on the rules and lived free and wild like God made us. I never thought I needed anyone till I met her.
Sandy gave him a bemused look, like she was lost in a maze groping for an opening.
I could do that for you, Manny, she simpered. I could make you bleed.
The words tumbled out of her mouth like foreign objects. Manny laughed and stroked her cheek with the back of his hand.
My dear, you're much too sweet to do harm.
You're a flower. Lovely. Fragile.
He got out of the car and closed the door.
Thanks for the ride,
he called, slapping the rear end of the Caprice. Tears in her eyes, she drove away. Manny crossed the stagnant waters of the ditch and made his way to a thicket of pecan saplings overgrown with wild grapevines. Here he could sit and enjoy the shade and check on Kit. He wanted to be near her, to know her rhythms and her habits. Was she an early riser? When did she go to work? What did she like to eat? Then, a sickening thought. Were there men? Chapter 28. Kit rolled over in bed and sat herself up. The mattress slumped on the side where she had slept the past 5 or so hours. She'd gotten back to the house as the sun was coming up, collapsed into bed, and slept deeply. Now it was noon, and her muscles and joints had stiffened so much that when she went downstairs, it felt like trudging through mud. She made it to the sink and brought back a cup full of ice water, then turned on the ceiling fan and returned to her bed, her bare feet propped on the brass footboard. How strange it felt to rest. A warm feeling had lingered after she left Caleb's home. To the tick of the fan, she let her mind wander. She could not explain this feeling of peace. After a night like that, she should be off somewhere digging a trench or burning brush. There would be rage, a violent act against nature. But there, in his house with its ridiculous curtains, he had handled her like a fallen wren. She couldn't remember the last time she'd felt so cared for. Maybe not since Eleanor. She was just about to start worrying again about Charlie when the girl traipsed through the front door and up to her room as if a day hadn't passed since they'd seen each other.
Where have you been?
Kit barked, though she wanted to hug her daughter tight till she yelled. Charlie stopped in front of Kit's door.
Smoking weed with Dirk,
she said, direct and barefaced. On another day, Kit would have come down harder on her. Far as she knew, Charlie had never done drugs before, and she sure as hell shouldn't have been out with a boy all night. But Kit was so relieved to see her safe, so weary of fighting, she called a silent truce.
What happened to you?
Charlie said, her tone less flippant, and Kit realized she must have seen her busted lip. She didn't like lying, especially not after Charlie's latest show of honesty. But she wasn't ready to get into any of what happened last night.
I took Warbucks out for a ride, Kit said. Got pitched off and kissed a fence post on my way down.
Shit, Charlie said, apparently satisfied. Okay, well, I'm gonna cram for my tests tomorrow. Do not disturb.
And with a flourish of her sleep-tussled hair, she disappeared into her room. How Kit missed the days when Charlie had looked up to her. How she would run up to her after school, clutching a drawing she had made, some scribble resembling nothing. The pride in Charlie's voice as she described the drawing to her mom. She felt the pang in her heart even now at Charlie's capacity for wonder. Charlie would push and push.
Look at this, Mommy! Did you see?
Until Kit could muster the desired amount of praise. How could she have wasted those days, so squeamish about the demands of motherhood that she couldn't absorb how beautiful it was to be needed? Worse still, she hadn't seen how much Charlie had given to her. Now she shuddered at how close she'd come to taking off last night, running laps in and out of town, flirting with escape. She hoped to God Charlie never found out. As she replayed the tape of the evening before, it was like watching someone else's movie. The trailer park, the drinking, ignoring her instinct that Trip was trouble. In the light of day, it all seemed so dramatic. Ever since Manny came back, she'd recognized that she'd been weird as shit, off balance. Like he had suddenly appeared on the bridge she and Charlie had been walking. A bridge that was only wide enough for two. She was so accustomed to dealing with things alone, in the swirling darkness of her own mind, that the idea of sharing Charlie with someone, with Manny, was paralyzing. And how could they just pick up where they left off after all that had happened? The three of them. A happy TV family, roast in the oven, a stiff drink in his hand. She almost laughed. His presence confused and frightened her, and she was sure last night's tussle with Trip would never have happened if she hadn't run into Manny. And now it was like he was everywhere. It hadn't been long before news of the dashing reformed convict, Manuel, was all over town. Kit heard tell of his kindly deeds. At the grocery store between gushing housewives,
"Did you ever meet a straight man that was so, so sensitive?"
Or at the diner,
"I swear he hadn't even touched his sandwich, but when he saw poor old Levi counting his pennies for a bowl of soup, Manny slid his lunch right on down the counter and went hungry."
She had heard of his theatrics in church with Ms. Blanchette several times, each more embellished than the last. When Beulah Baker had called him positively Christ-like, Kit left her shopping cart in the middle of the canned foods aisle and walked out. He was conning the whole damn town. Her goddamn town. She knew the whole charade was somehow directed at her. But to what end? He had said he wanted her forgiveness, but the Manny she knew wanted more. He'd had the sense to stay away from her, at least. She had had only one encounter with him aside from seeing him at the church with Warbucks. She had just come out of the post office with a huge box of flea collars for Doc, and he had a handful of letters to mail. She stopped cold and let the door swat her behind. He wore a t-shirt from the church softball league and his old jeans, his hair still long, now threaded with gray. Hadn't she noticed it before, this mortal change? She reminded herself of the last time she saw him, drunk and hateful, and held it up to the man in front of her. He was different. In his downcast eyes, his tentative manner. He was humbled. Maybe it wasn't his fault the town was so lusty for a hero. Maybe it wasn't a con, but contrition. She didn't know which feelings to trust. The ones she felt now, which shimmered with the possibility that the good she had known was not gone. Or the bruise he'd left behind, dark and deep. The canny voice that whispered, "Beware." She took a lozenge of ice from the glass by her bed and slipped it inside her cheek. The cold deepened, then numbed until she could feel the nerves under her teeth beat. She'd be a fool to take his act at face value. Manny always had an angle, and he never left without getting what he came for. Kit got up, walked to the bathroom, and turned on the shower. As she waited for the old boiler to get going, she shed her soiled and bloodied clothes and looked at the damage. Her fat, bitten lip, glossy with ointment, made her look sultry. New bruising was beginning to show. 5 maroon smudges where the cowboy had grabbed her scant handful of breast. She turned and craned her neck around to see her back reflected in the mirror. Nearly half of its surface was purpled and scuffed from being shoved in the bed of the truck. Between this and the old machete gash on her shin, she looked barely better than dog food. She lingered as the steam billowed around her, then stood under the shower and closed her eyes. Her thoughts flashed to Tripp's teeth in her lip, the vicious change in his voice, the metallic smell of his truck as she skidded deeper into its bed, and the strength in her arms as she beat him. Now she was 15 years back, rolling over a messy bed with Manny after a job, at once dodging his grasp and fighting to be held. Icy air conditioning, the doors on the radio, whiskey and lemon drops on his breath. Chapter 29. Charlie woke up early the next morning, fried an egg, and rode her bike to the school to take her tests. Kit had been so distracted the last few days, she had completely forgotten about the suspension. Charlie's show of responsibility was either promising or suspicious, but Kit chose to reward her daughter's initiative by allowing her to get to and from school unchaperoned. This was partly out of guilt for being neglectful, and partly because she just wanted to have a good day, free from strife. It seemed like every time she tried to come down hard on Charlie, it pushed her away. Maybe Kit needed to trust her a little more. Maybe it wasn't the end of the world if she shared a joint with a crush. She went to Doc's and put in a half day of work so she could be home when Charlie returned. Kit mucked the stalls and refreshed the floors with sawdust and hay, watered and fed every living thing in the place. Then she prepped a tray of sterilized tools and assisted while Doc gelded a pretty Cremello colt. When she got back, she was hot, tired, and hungry, but restored from having been useful. She was in such fine fettle she decided to cook up some frozen tamales for her and Charlie. While the tamales steamed, she waited idly, looking at the family photos that were gathered above the dresser. There were her great-grandparents, severe and clad in black, her great-grandmother holding the Bible in her lap, the wedding photo of Eleanor and Damus, and young Eleanor, a vixen dancer, piercing the camera with sass. Kit missed having her aunt there, a living link to these moments in time. Still, it meant something to have this visual reminder that they came from real people. She had not materialized from nothing, even if it felt that way sometimes. She wanted to mark a spot on the wall for Charlie. Though they had never owned a camera, Kit had purchased photos from the school when she could afford them. She opened the dresser and rummaged through knitting needles and yarn, old receipts, and batteries caked in crystallized acid until she found a bench sheet of 8 small photos. Sweet Charlie, thick braids resting on her shoulders, her eyes wide open. Kit brought the photos into the kitchen, where the bitter smell of burnt fat was strong. She grabbed the top off the pot, releasing billows of steam and smoke, and lifted the colander of tamales onto the counter. Her hands pinkened from the steam, so she hit the tap to slow the burn. As she ran her hands under the faucet, she heard a knock at the door. She turned off the water and listened, heard movement on the porch. There was no car visible from the window. She wiped her hands on her jeans and cracked open the door. Manny stood there, smelling of soap and mint, dressed up for a date. Long hair combed back and neat, secondhand slacks, a vigorous shine on his boots. She kept the door cracked and propped her toe behind it, a glance at the gun in case she needed it. After a quick assessment, she decided he seemed not apt to start any trouble. At least, not now. His eyebrows pinched a look of concern, and Kit remembered what a mess she must be.
"Forgive me for showing up uninvited," he said, "but I heard you got roughed up and had to see you were okay."
"May roughed up." He laughed.
"Fair enough. I guess I don't have to worry about you. The guy must look like a piñata at the end of the party."
She felt a hint of pleasure at how well she had fought. A younger version of Kit would have basked in his pride. Still, she didn't like him knowing her business.
"How did you hear about that?"
"Pastor Tom told me. Heard they took the guy to county hospital because his internal injuries were too much for our doctor out here. That a woman had done it."
He looked her up and down as if checking for something.
"Now, who else would I think of but you?"
A woman had done it. Kit wondered what this new Manny would do if he heard the cowboy had tried to rape her. Manny slid one hand in his pocket, took a step back, and said,
"I'll get out of your hair."
As he stood there before her, something old and stronger than she cared to struggle with took over. She told herself that she was just curious about him, that he seemed changed, that she only wanted to talk, that she wanted to know what was going through his mind that day. Why he'd changed tack and held up that poor woman at the barbecue joint. Lonely was not a word she wanted to use, but that was the feeling that arose when he shifted back on his heels and turned to go. Like it or not, he was the only person that connected her to her past. The only one, besides Charlie, who knew her at all.
"No," she said, turning to the side to make way. "Come on in."
Manny hesitated, then scuffed his boots on the welcome mat, ducked his head, and crossed the threshold. Kit one-handed a pair of beers from the fridge and popped the caps. Manny waited for her to sit at the kitchen table before he seated himself. He kept his eyes soft and slightly downward, and all the while she watched him intently. He did not drink any, but Kit slopped hers back. Manny nodded his head toward the mess on the counter.
"Sorry, did I interrupt your dinner?"
Kit was dying to eat, but not here with him. She wanted to gorge, standing up, with no witnesses. She swallowed the better part of her beer to feel full.
"Look, I don't have a lot of time, so you can just say what you wanted to say."
"I'm sorry. I just can't believe I'm sitting here right now. You've been on my mind for a long time, and now I find I don't know what to say."
"That's a first," Kit said.
Manny shrugged, smiled. A rain started up, soft, then so hard it squirted through the screen on the open window. Manny got up to pull the window closed, took a dish towel that was wadded in a ball on the counter to mop up the moisture on the sill. Kit was antsy and didn't like his stall tactics, shit he would pull to buy time when they were conning.
"Did I ever tell you anything about my folks?" he asked.
Kit was irritated by the opening. Of all the things they had to hash out, his family was not first on her list.
"No, you never told me much of anything about yourself," she said. "Which is funny, because it seemed like you were always bragging about something or trying to teach me a lesson, running your mouth like a carnival barker."
She felt a tumbling of old anger.
"You never fucking shut up."
Manny smiled apologetically.
"I was pretty selfish back then," he said,
and held the towel under a hot tap, rinsing and squeezing rhythmically.
"You know," he said, "my father was an immigrant. He came over here as a teenager from Cuba on an actual raft with his uncle. When he got to Miami, he wouldn't take just any job in a kitchen like all the other guys he knew. He was trying to be somebody."
He folded the towel symmetrically in half and squared it to the edge of the counter.
"My mother's family was rich, rich. Not that any of it ever came my way, and she spoke that standard English like they did in the movies. She was as American as Jane goddamn Russell. Even Cubans couldn't tell she was one of their own. And he worshipped her. I remember he was always taking classes to lose his accent, always trying to cover up the fact that he was foreign. When I was born, they would tell me, my eyes were so blue, the nurse crossed herself, and my father got on his knees and prayed, like I was some kind of gift from God."
Kit was torn between her genuine interest in the story and her reluctance to reveal this to him. The tension between the two was making her surly.
"What's your fucking point?" she said. "Nobody in my family had blue eyes. They were all brown, brown, and brown. How did I get blue eyes? Some little drop of conquistador blood from 500 years ago just waiting for its moment to shine? To them, it was a God-given blessing. They treated me like I was the center of the universe. They spoiled me, and my little brother hated me for it. You'd think I would be so full of their love and kindnesses that I'd have to turn out good. But all it did, all that fuss, was make me feel invincible. And the more people fawned all over me, the more I hated them. I was bad, okay? That's my point. I want you to know that I know I was a shit."
Kit waited for more to determine if this was for real, aware that beneath the flowery speech he could be gaming her.
"Okay," she said. "Kitty, I'm telling you," he said,
his eyes direct and warm.
"Because I want to make amends. What do I need to do to get you to forgive me?"
Again, the mention of forgiveness set something alight in her. To forgive was frightening, and yet she sensed how much she needed to let down her arms. It had hardened her to begrudge him, and others, for so long. His eyes, a warmer blue, reached out to her, and she was blinded, for a moment, to why she could not trust this new Manny, the kind and modest incarnation of the rat she once knew. He seemed reformed, and everyone else thought so too. He wasn't hiding his old ways. In fact, he wore them plainly. But the force of her memories pushed back against the Manny in front of her. She tried to hold down the images as if drowning them, but they broke the surface and sputtered to life. The creak of the glider and the painless cut. The stolen bouquet begging on the pillow. The casual expression on his face as he held a family in terror. The way freedom sang through her on that highway without him. She bolted upright, toppling the chair on its side.
"This was a bad idea. You need to get out of here."
She began to tremble.
"Now, now, now."
Manny looked confused, hurt even. Her breaths were quick and short, the jolt of last night still in her blood. Manny reached his hand over toward her.
"Hey now, I'm not mad at you for ditching me."
He grabbed her eyes with his.
"I'm not. You were always free to leave, from day one. You know that."
She bit the side of her tongue to taste her blood.
"You're a bad man."
"Yes, I was," he said. "The worst kind."
He took her hand. She jerked it away, but he held tight and looked her in the eyes.
"Hey, if I were you, I'd have left too."
She turned away, blistering under his gaze, hating the way he disarmed her.
"You know, they asked me about you when they took me in. Questioned me about my partner, who you were, what you'd done. I told them I had forced you into it."
"Why, though?" she asked, hoping she hadn't given away that she had seen how he was quoted in the paper.
"You're all I thought about in there. I couldn't let you get locked up. I needed to know you would be there when I got out, even if it meant I had to come find you myself."
He ran his thumb along the vein that snaked over her wrist and across the back of her hand.
"The thought of seeing you again was what kept me from hanging myself on my sheets."
The image of him dangling by the neck in a prison cell shook her, but she steeled herself.
"I would have left you even if you hadn't done what you did."
She sniffed and held his gaze. She could tell by the way he sat back in his chair and tilted his head to the side that she had gotten his attention.
"Don't act like you don't know. You wanted me to. You made me kill our baby," she said,
as heartbroken as if it were actually true.
"The abortion?"
he said and squinted, disbelieving.
"You left me because of that?"
Kit nodded, trying not to let the hurt show.
"There were other things, too."
"I just had no idea,"
he said, and shook his head, like he was sifting through the implications of this turn.
"If you could have seen your face when you told me you were keeping it, all full of bluster. But you were scared, just a baby yourself. It was the only way."
She paced the length of the braided kitchen rug.
"Listen, I don't regret a thing. God's wisdom is infinite, and we are just where we should be. Turns out you were right after all."
He paused, as if waiting to let a revelation sink in. She let the pieces lay and did not put them together.
"I know Charlie is mine," he said.
Kit's ears rang. She ran his words over in her mind to make sure she had heard right. Mine. She couldn't seem to get enough air in her lungs, and the collar of her shirt felt like it was cinched around her neck. She was hot and cold, the slimy way she felt when she was about to puke. He was saying something, but she couldn't make out the garbled, foreign sounds. She went for the door and tore out into the warm rain. When she reached the fence, she bent herself in half.
No, no, he couldn't have Charlie. He couldn't have a piece of the only person in her life she cherished. Why couldn't even this secret belong to her?
The trees dripped heavily on her back. Baritone bullfrogs croaked in the distance. Manny showed up behind her. She turned and shoved him back a few paces. He held out his palms like an offering.
"Hey, hey," he said gently.
as if approaching a spooked horse.
You don't have to worry. I don't mean you harm. She's yours, really. You raised her. You loved her all this time. I know what that's like, he said. Because of how I felt for you. All I ask, with your blessing, is to get to know her. I want her to know I wouldn't have left on purpose.
His voice seemed to catch on a feeling. A shimmer passed across his eyes.
And if I had known that you were still pregnant, that you really wanted to keep her, I never would have taken you out that day. I never would have done what I did.
Kit heard him, though his voice sounded faint and far as an echo. As she made room for this new possibility, the thrashing in her chest settled. She shook her head, not knowing where to land, tired of fighting it. Under the camouflage of rain, she released a few long tears. She hung there a good while before turning to him. How did you know? She asked. Manny laughed a big one.
Kitty cat, come on.
He looked at her like she was joking.
She looks just like me.
It hurt to admit it was true. Charlie had many elegant and striking features, none of which had come from Kit. But she had always considered those essential and not heritable traits. God-given features that belonged to Charlie. He kept his distance, but gestured with his jaw toward the house.
Can I beg your forgiveness where it's nice and dry? Maybe share some of that Mexican food?
I don't know how, she said, not even wanting to utter the words, to forgive. But even in admitting this, was surprised to feel a slender ray of warmth, an opening in her breath. Chapter 30. When Charlie tramped inside, soaked to her scalp, Kit froze like she'd been caught stealing. Manny stood up and put his hand on Kit's shoulder. They passed a weighted thing between them, she and Manny, back and forth like a stone, until finally Kit cleared her throat. She held the words back, rolling them around in her mouth before she let them go, once and forever. As if preparing herself to jump from a great height, she imagined the possible outcomes. Would they hug and cry? Would Charlie run away? Would they chase her down and hold her till she calmed? She couldn't know until she said the thing she thought she'd never say. Go on and say hello, she said. Her voice was dusky and tight. This is Manny. This is your father. Charlie's features were slow to register. She only stared as rainwater ran from the twists of her hair down her arm. Kit couldn't get a read on what Charlie was feeling, or if she even understood. There was an off-center look that Kit couldn't quite understand. Then, as if vomiting, Charlie hurled out laughter, a stream of uncontrollable gusts of sound, gasping for air. She held onto the banister and swung around, plopping down on the base of the staircase, stricken by hilarity that was only known to her. That's it, Kit said. This was a mistake. Then she turned to Manny and growled, Get on out. Manny pressed the tension down with his hands.
Now, hang on a second. We just turned her world upside down.
More softly, he said,
Let me talk to her.
Charlie was trying to speak, but kept laughing over her words, wheezing. She dragged herself up from the step and came over to the kitchen table. She looked at Manny, checking him out.
You're my dad, she said. Manny, huh?
Then she turned to Kit and pointed at her.
I thought you were acting crazy when he came by.
Kit shook her head, willing herself not to turn this into a fight.
Look, let me make this right, Manny said, lifting a set of keys off their hook by the door. Kitty, I'm taking your truck. Me and Charlie are gonna go get acquainted. I'll have her back in an hour.
He went over and laid a hand on Charlie's back and swept her toward the door, not by force, but as if she were already headed that way. She glanced back at Kit, as if expecting her to kick this guy's ass down the steps. But Kit just stood there, frozen, unnatural as a scarecrow. Then, on a 10-second delay, she went after them.
Wait!
She yelled and jogged out into the rain and down the front steps.
Where are y'all going? I'm coming with you.
Manny was already starting up the truck.
I'm not gonna kidnap her or anything, he said and winked. I just got out of prison, Kitty. Not trying to go back there anytime soon.
He looked around and stuck his hand out the window.
Hey, look, stopped raining.
As Manny drove away with Charlie, Kit ran the length of the driveway, cleared the cattle guard, and continued onto the main road for a ways until they were too far gone. When she lost sight of them, she bent at the waist, her hands propped on her knees, and caught her breath. Huffing, spent, she felt the blood fill her face and ears and fingertips, her tongue fat against her teeth, and wished she hadn't let Charlie go. She stood up and got lightheaded, her vision silvered and faded.
They're coming back, they're coming back, they're coming back, she said to quiet her terrified heart.
The summer rain had fallen hard, and anything that wasn't paved was mud. Charlie and Manny sat in the truck in an empty field, a humid mist just visible rising around them. Charlie ached with the shock of it, like a bone-deep flu. It was still unclear how she came to be sitting here with this man, her father. Father. When she first heard the word, Charlie had shuffled the pieces around until she arranged something that made sense. She stood there stupidly, letting those words fall to the floor, and could hear only the grind and squeak of toads and a hot gale rustling the leaves, envoy of a second rain. Then she had seen the storm in his brow, the way his lip cut across his teeth, and she knew. Father. Maybe it sounded strange because there had not been a slot waiting for him to fill. There had been no trace of him to miss. No photo, no anecdotes, no fuzzy memories. It had always been simply Kit and Charlie, the end. She remembered what Mrs. Fowler had said about needing a man in the house, that kids needed discipline. Was that what he would be like? Spankings and groundings and stern words? Or touch football in the yard and frosty hunting trips at dawn?
I can't believe Mom let you drive the truck, she said, hoping to puncture the silence.
She recalled their conversation in the parking lot. The stolen Cokes, the friendly way he had called after her, had seemed concerned about her traveling alone. The way she had felt when he spoke to her in the parking lot, both curious and wary. In light of this new information, his actions made more sense. He must have known then who she was. But if so, why hadn't he said something?
She kind of owes me one, he said, with a tone that rang sullen. Hey, you like donuts?
Sure I do, she said.
He leaned over and buckled the seatbelt across her lap, tugging the loose end until it was snug. Then he lay hard on the gas and the wheels spun a few rounds before gripping a dry patch and sending them lurching forward, ripping up a circle in the soggy pasture, bits of turf flying by and landing in their wake. She squealed, rode that truck like a roller coaster, arms stretched out the window, letting the sudden shifts in speed and direction tug her body where they would. He brought the truck to a stop and turned to Charlie. They were breathless and mottled with mud splatter, eyes bright.
"No,"
she said, giggling.
"I mean the donuts you can eat."
"Oh," he said, smacking his forehead with his palm. "I knew that."
They drove 20 miles west to the donut hole off the interstate, sandwiched between a Western Union and an aerobics studio in a drab strip mall. The light in the window was blinking, which meant they were frying up a fresh batch.
"Follow my lead and keep cool," Manny instructed.
He glided up to the counter and got the cashier's attention.
"I'll have a baker's dozen, half glazed, half jelly, half chocolate."
Charlie, beset by sudden shyness, reached up toward his ear and whispered,
"Sprinkles."
"Half sprinkles."
The cashier bit her lip.
"So, three of each?"
"She's smart, ain't she, Charlie?"
The cashier arranged the donuts in rows, taking her time. She returned with the box and rang them up.
"It'll be $4, please," she said,
her gaze blatantly fixed on the swath of chest that showed at the collar of his shirt.
"That's a steal," Manny said.
He reached in his pocket, then put his hands back on the counter.
"You know what? One more box just like it, please and thank you."
When the cashier turned around, so did Manny, carrying the box of donuts, and he cruised right out without paying. Charlie followed him and played it cool. By the time the woman turned around, they were back in the truck. They parked under a billboard on the way back to Pecan Hollow and ate, the box between them. The air hung heavy and damp, except when a passing car sent an occasional breeze their way.
"That was crazy,"
Charlie said, halfway through a sprinkles donut. She wanted to ask him why he kept stealing these little things they could easily have paid for, but she didn't want to offend him.
"Aren't you afraid of getting caught?"
Manny looked at her, amused.
"What? You never slipped a pack of gum in your pocket? Never took a dollar out of your mama's wallet?"
She smiled behind her hair.
"No, I mean, you know how you were saying to my mom that you weren't trying to go back to prison?"
"Ah,"
he said, mid-chew, nodding.
"Look, I'm not trying to hide it. I was in prison all that time. Since before you were born, probably."
Charlie's eyes popped open.
"No shit,"
she said, thinking his crimes might have been more serious than walking out with a box of donuts.
"What for?"
Manny chuckled.
"Armed robbery."
"Wow," Charlie said, uneasy. "Well, shouldn't you be a little more careful?"
She held the remains of her donut.
"Nah,"
he said.
"I'll do the small stuff because it doesn't matter. Who's gonna bust me for a Coke?"
He stuffed half a plain glazed into his mouth. He chewed for a bit and swallowed.
"I just want you to know, I would have been here for you if I could."
As Charlie took this in, she studied his features. His skin, lashes, hair were each a different shade of brown, like hers. But his eyes were blue, like there was sky behind them. And she liked the way the creases at his eyes stretched down to his jaw, even when he wasn't smiling. She looked at her large hands, with their long, tapered fingers, and saw they were his. She imagined herself with eyes like his and wondered if the world looked different through them. She had certainly noticed being treated differently than her light-eyed, fair-haired classmates. People used slurs in that stupid way that was supposed to be friendly, as if to prove how not a big deal it was to call you that. There were a few openly hateful people in town, but most everyone was that kind of rude that made it hard to pinpoint.
the way her teachers expected less of her. And yet she never could seem to please them, no matter how hard she tried. The way she would find out about parties a week after they happened, that her invitation had gotten lost in the mail. Sadly, she had no group to identify with when the slurs came. She imagined if she had actually been Mexican, or known who the hell she was, these names might hurt a lot more. But she would have the solidarity of a culture behind her, too. When he caught her looking, she turned away. "So, like, are we Mexican, or what are we?" she asked.
"Ah,"
he said as he finished off a jellied and sucked the goo from his fingers.
"I can't speak for your mama. She's some kind of orphan mongrel. But being from Texas, she's bound to have some Mexican somewhere."
He licked his lips and wiped them sort of primly with a hanky.
"But me and you, we're Cuban."
She tried to remember what she knew about Cuba from social studies class. Cuban Missile Crisis, Cuban cigars, Fidel Castro. But they were vague impressions that had no personal impact, just two-dimensional images culled from what little information had made its way to her in Pecan Hollow. Black beans and plantains, salsa dancing, rusty cars from the 50s. She felt ashamed of her small life. "Is that where you're from?"
"No, no. I don't even speak much Spanish, to tell you the truth. I grew up in Florida. My father, your grandfather, came over and wanted us to fit in, so they spoke English at home. He wanted so badly to be American, he kinda scribbled over the Cuban parts of him and pretended they weren't there."
Charlie noticed there was something canned about the way he spoke, as if he'd said these things in just this way a dozen times before, but she brushed it aside. When he described her grandparents, it didn't seem real. She thought of the photos on her wall at home, the ancient people she never knew. At least she had stories of Eleanor. "Do you have any pictures of them?" she asked Manny. He seemed taken aback.
"Why would I have something like that on me?"
he said. This time she detected not smokescreen, but an unpleasant truth. Again, she tucked it aside.
"So what was she like?"
she said, changing the subject. He jerked his head back a little, squinted at her.
"My mother?"
"No," she said. "Mine." He said, and tapped his top lip. She saw how it curled up at the ridge like hers.
"Stubborn, secretive, all clammed up most of the time. Not pretty. But you couldn't take your eyes off her."
He smiled.
"What's she like now?"
The question made her choke up a little.
"Pretty much the same, I guess. She's hard in every way possible. Hard to be around, hard to please, hard to like. She's not a happy person, that's for sure. For my whole life, it's just been the two of us. And when she gets on my nerves, there's no place to go. I got no one to talk to. Not really."
It was nice to be able to tell someone who got it. There was so much she wanted him to decode for her. In another world, she would have loved to sit and chat with her mom like this, to tell her what was on her mind, to ask her questions about her life before. She longed for these little luxuries, but they felt as vague and remote as Cuba.
"That's kind of how it was for us, too,"
Manny said.
"She never was a talker, was she? We just had each other. It was pretty great for a long time, but..."
He sniffed. "What happened?" She was thirsty to know what had caused them to split. She was sure it had been her mom's fault. He must have gotten sick of her strong and silent BS. Or maybe Kit had been the one to leave, allergic as she was to a good thing.
Oh, that's boring grown-up stuff, he said. Don't you fret about such things.
Come on, she pushed. I can take it.
How old did you say you were again?
He said and squinted.
About 9?
He was razzing her.
13 and a half, she said. Going on old enough for grown-up stuff.
He laughed for real at that one.
Ah, I don't know, he said a little more seriously. The thing about your mama,
he went on, and looked off at the dome of an oak tree, searching.
She's kind of like beef jerky. She's tough, and it takes a lot of work for a little reward. But for some reason, you keep going back for more.
Charlie rolled back laughing, giddy to know he understood.
Hang on, I got one, she said. She's kind of like a badger wearing Tony Lamas.
She's short, she's mean, and she looks silly in boots.
She laughed so hard she snorted a globule of wet donut into her sinuses. She coughed and laughed, and Manny whacked her across the back, laughing with her. She curled her legs up underneath her and tilted her head toward him. He lifted his arm to make room, and she rested her cheek against his ribs. Manny pulled up to the house. She got out and leaned through his window. She smelled the wax in his hair, the lemon drops on his breath.
Don't you want to come back in?
She asked. He took a deep breath and whistled it through his front teeth.
I don't think so, sweetheart. Let's do this one step at a time.
A pull at her throat. She realized she had expected him to stay around until she was ready for him to go.
Okay.
She pushed back from the window, trying to look blasé, and walked toward the house. Without turning, she shouted,
And thanks for the donuts!
Manny tooted the horn at her in response and got out of the truck. Charlie turned around and watched him go, wishing she could follow.